And welcome back to In the Moment. I am Lori Walsh. Kevin Wooster is with us this Thursday. You can find his blog on the SDPB website. Head over to sdpb.org/Wooster. Hi, Kevin, and welcome back.
Well, it's so great to be back. How are you doing?
I am doing really well. Yeah. It is always great to have you. I just got lost in this week's blog post this morning and enjoyed...
That's because it came in so late.
You know, whenever I read it, whatever time I read it, Kevin, it's just, you know, the story, and you paint the picture so well. So let's talk about hunting that isn't really hunting, and set the stage for me as far as why, you know, this, you know, process of enlisting volunteers to hunt elk, not hunt elk, to, what's the language I need? Kevin, help me out.
Well, these are skilled volunteers, and they were involved in a management action.
Management action. I'm writing that down.
when I'm talking, because at Wind Cave National Park, it literally takes an act of Congress to have a hunting season, like they have in Custer Park for certain species at certain times, and they use that as a management tool. And some national parks allow hunting, but most don't. And Wind Cave is one of the ones. It's a very early park, I think, about the eighth park, national park formed. And that was never written into its code. Now, that causes a problem if you're trying to manage a certain wildlife species like elk, which can get a little bit heavy-footed for their environment. And there are also some disease questions. And that was at the core of this special management action, which I like to call a hunt because it makes the wildlife guys down at the park flinch whenever I say hunt or hunters. And it was an interesting response that hasn't been used in the park, I think, since the 1950s, meaning guns haven't been used to try and control the herd.
Okay.
And it's based around a unique situation down there, too, with chronic wasting disease. And we'll get into that a little bit more if you'd like to.
Let's start with who shows up, who are the skilled volunteers, and how do they get selected?
I can tell you this. When I saw the notice from the park last fall, and I keep really close tabs on this park. It's a great park. It's a wonderful place to go. If you haven't spent any time in Wind Cave, go there. Mm. Above ground, below ground, there's just so much there to see and do. And when this notice came out on that they were looking for volunteers to have this quote-unquote management action, and that they said right away, we want you to help us reduce the elk herd in the park. We're looking for people that are good shots because you're going to have to qualify, and you're going to have to be in good shape because you have to be able to march 10 miles with a 70-pound pack on your back in all kinds of weather. Mm-hmm. You could put in for that and get selected, and if you pass both those requirements, you could get to go out not just by yourself and wander around. You would go out with a guide in groups specifically to find animals that they wanted to take. They didn't just shoot any elk because they obviously take any elk that might be sick or a certain age class. A lot of females, of course, to try and trim the herd. That's one of the ways to do it, the producers. And it was 48 people ended up going. Not everybody who signed up showed up. Not everybody who signed up passed the shooting test.
Sure, yeah. How hard is it in a regular year in the rest of the state to get an elk tag and to hunt elk? How significant is it for the volunteers?
Well, it can be. If you're going to try and shoot a bull elk, a big bull elk, that can be a very difficult license to get, especially for a rifle. And it depends on other elk seasons where if you're willing to shoot a cow, which is a great meat source, that's a wonderful type of venison, you can get those animals, but it isn't permits, but it doesn't mean you'll get the animal. These are spooky animals. They're difficult to hunt in most areas. It's rough terrain, and they're really clever in the way if an animal can be clever in the way they can get away from hunters. So it's a high quality hunt whether you're hunting a big bull or a cow, and the landscape you're hunting in, of course, is part of the part of the beauty.
Yeah. So I want to talk about how it benefits the herd and chronic wasting disease. But first, let's just talk about how it benefits those volunteers. At the end of the management action, what was the benefit to them?
Well, I ended up interviewing a woman, the only woman that hunted down there, and mm-hmm. she was wonderful. She's a 37-year-old wife and mother of two, and a professional, and works for the School for the Deaf and outreach, and does a lot of hunting herself. But this was a hunt that she said she'll always remember because of the landscape they were in, the scenery they were in, the several days of really rigorous hiking with the rifles and all the stuff and in the backcountry, and such a connection with those animals. She said that whether they were the ones they were hunting or just the ones they saw, and also she took a lot of pride in the fact that this is a very important research study. The animals shot are all examined for chronic wasting disease, and they'll be used in research elsewhere. The data that comes out of this, and also that it was produced about 7 tons of meat that after the animals were checked to make sure they were disease free, that went largely to feeding South Dakota, and where from there mostly to the reservations because of the cultural value of elk there, and of course the high need for a good protein source.
So let's talk about chronic wasting disease, what it is, and the elk herds in Wind Cave National Park.
Spooky disease. It's really, everybody knows about mad cow disease, and this mm-hmm. is essentially the deer elk version of that. There's no indication that it has jumped the barrier between those critters and human that supposedly if you cook meat well, you don't have to worry about it so much. But they're also very careful to watch out to not shoot a sick animal. And that goes throughout the Black Hills. That's really been a developing problem here in the last 15 years. We've rarely ever heard about it around here. And Wind Cave has an especial, Wind Cave National Park has a particular issue because there was a captive herd of elk that was infected with CWD, and that's largely blamed, I guess you could say, for the higher rates of CWD in the elk down that way. And that was on a ranch that belonged to the Casey family, the owners of Bear Country USA south here, and they had that elk herd, and they eventually had to destroy the whole herd and bury it on the site. And then some years after that, it's a beautiful ranch that they had that adjoins the park, and the park wanted to add that for years, and the Caseys wanted to sell it, and eventually they got that deal done with federal money that is now, as an aside, that is now up for cuts. The money they used at that time for the feds to purchase property is on the chopping block to a large extent under the new budget proposal federally.
Okay.
But that was it came with a wonderful 4,000-year-old buffalo drop, where the indigenous people would run buffalo off a cliff and then butcher them down below, and an old ranch and some historic things. But it does have that CWD stuff on it. So that was where all the elk were removed whole from the field and processed on that land, since it's known that there was already CWD present there. And again, the hunters took part in all that, and they loved it, and they loved part of the research. They loved sending the meat to people that need it, and they got some of that meat for themselves.
So what kind of precautions are they taking then as part of the research study to not only preserve the scientific data that they need, but then from a safety standpoint?
Oh, very careful. That one of the things is usually you'll field dress an animal, and they didn't do that there because they don't want to open anything up out at other areas, so that they were all hauled back to this processing site and used separate knives for each animal and kept everything separate, and everybody obviously wore rubber gloves and were very specific about cleanliness. And when they cleaned the knives, I think they were soaked in a bleach solution for an hour before they were used for any others. And they kept the samples very carefully, and they ended up shooting 262 elk throughout the winter, the 4,800s. And for example, one of the guys I interviewed shot 22, and he said that's elk, maybe a lifetime's worth of elk for some people, and maybe some people would never shoot that many elk.
Right.
And he volunteered in case he was needed, and some people didn't show up, and some people didn't qualify, so he filled in for them. but he also did a lot of elk processing and a lot of work in that regard. And the samples obviously are shipped off and very carefully analyzed, and I think it was 34 positive animals that they got out of the 260 they actually tested. So now they'll figure out how that fits into the overall herd, which now is about cut in half. There's about 250 or so left. And that's kind of the range they want to manage that herd. And they hope that a lower rate or lower herd level will mean lower rates of CWD down there. And that's part of the research they're going to be doing, too. And it's just also better for the environment, better for the animals themselves.
So the rates of CWD have been going up, holding steady. What's sort of the historical path of this disease?
It's a recent frame of reference because they didn't really look for it very much until it was found down in the Southern Hills about 15 or 18 years ago, first notified. It was probably always a really low incidence disease throughout the wild, but down there, the studies in the early, like 2005 on to 2009, showed about a 3% rate down in that area. And then it went up to about 10% in a little later study, the 2012-14. And they're thinking that it's 10% and it's probably going to be a little higher now. And part of that is tied to that herd that was buried, the domestic herd. But they're also just wondering if it is magnified by the growth in that herd size and whether that had an effect. Now they've worked very hard in some crazy ways to reduce that herd, because once CWD was in, they couldn't transfer elk to other state, federal, or tribal agencies.
Sure.
So they wouldn't be able to hunt them like they did in the 50s. One year in the 50s, gunners shot 700 of them to cut them from about 1,200 and eventually get them to a herd of 200 or 300. And that was back, in case you don't know it, when Custer State Park had its own commercial bison processing plant on the park.
I did
and
not
so
know
they
that.
Took,
no.
Yeah, they took the animals there and processed them and sold them, and a commercial meat thing, and then they also sent a lot of them out to the tribes. So once CWD came in, they couldn't control them that way, so they had to come up with something else. One of the things they did, since Custer Park wanted more elk, was they laid down sections of the fence and used helicopters to drive some of the elk out of Wind Cave and into Custer, and there were hilarious stories about that, because the elk didn't want to go. They'd get on one side, come back under. Some of them crawled under the fence or kind of scraped under the fence. And so they'd have a guy named Dwayne Weber, who's a great guy down there in the park with long legs and can walk forever. And his job for a long time was to patrol the fence and make sure the elk weren't working their way under it to get back into the park. So these are, and they can jump over it too. I mean, elk can jump over a 5-foot fence, and if they want to, they can sometimes just run through it. So
how did they handle then, as you say that, I'm thinking about the other public relations challenges of a hunt happening. It's not a hunt, of a management action happening, but it looks a whole lot like a hunt to a tourist.
And that's dangerous, because some people have a bad feeling about hunting generally, and the idea of hunting in a national park would just be a ghastly thought for some.
And many, what they would not understand necessarily if they didn't know what was happening, the quantity involved as well.
And so they tried to advertise, but then one of the hunters I talked to said, man, we were really careful. If when we were out, and these were hikes, 12, 14 miles a day, and sometimes when it was bitter cold, through snow, up and down landscape, mm-hmm. I mean, this is difficult stuff. And he said, when the elk moved us toward a road, we were very careful about what we did. He said, we did not want to shoot an animal in front of some family or somebody going for a drive through the park and see us drop an elk out there. And shooting big game animals, people might think that you shoot them and they fall over and that's it. And sometimes that's the way it is. And sometimes it's a whole lot worse than that. So you didn't want to be in a situation where you'd have an animal wounded near the road, or even just see somebody with rifles shooting an animal and have it fall over. I mean,
ends up in the New York Times, then that's what happens next.
Yes,
right.
Very careful and very sensitive about that.
Winter, a quiet time out there, and as you said at the beginning of our talk, it's sort of an arduous time for the volunteers too.
It was you didn't go. It wasn't for the faint of heart or the weak of legs and lungs, I can tell you that. And the woman that I interviewed, she's in pretty good shape, but she said, I was hunting with a guy that was just in the Marines, just got out of the Marines, and with a 20-year-old that I knew from town. And she talked about how they just kept telling her on some of those long hikes, okay, it's just another gentle incline, just one more gentle incline. And she said at one point we were along the fence boundary, the park boundary, and on one of those quote-unquote gentle inclines, I had to grab the fence to drag myself up the side of the hill.
That's what they say in the Marines about everything. Don't believe it.
Yeah. So, but she loved it for what it meant, will mean to research, what it could mean to the animals, and what it meant, obviously, for hungry people in South Dakota. So
let's leave it there. Kevin Wooster's blog is at sdpb.org. Wooster, you can read the whole story, comment, join the conversation with Kevin, and look for those throughout the weeks. Kevin Wooster, thank you so much for being here today. We appreciate
my
you
my
as
pleasure,
always.
Lori. We'll see you.